Today is July 22nd, 2003. This is an interview with Miss Cecilia Estela Concha, directed by Mirna Parramantilla for the Oral History Institute at the University of Texas at El Paso. Okay, so you were saying that your dad had all the equipment, but he never tried.
He went out, bought the equipment, a little ceramic bowl, I don't know what it was made of, and I remember seeing beer bottles, but I never saw him making it, but I think he did, and it didn't last very long. I don't think it was a success.
And now I'm going to jump to the big crash, to depression. How was the life before, or how do you realize that it was a depression? You were like, noticed that there's less food on your table or your clothes?
The crash was in 29, as you know then. Mm-hmm. I was 4 years old, so I cannot go back that far.
Yeah, I know you were a
little girl.
Baby.
But in the 30s, that's when it was felt in this area, as far as I can remember. 29, is it? Yeah, my parents were back here from California. And I remember, yeah, there weren't a lot of toys at Christmas time. We each got one toy. Ours were made by my dad. He was a carpenter. And I remember he made me a little desk one time for Christmas. He made a little, and this was for all the girls, a little table and chairs. And I don't remember what my brothers got. Well, there were a lot of girls in between my older brother and the next brother. So he was, I guess, a baby. I noticed that as far as food, Myrna, there was, yes, less, but we could shop in Juarez.
Oh, really?
Remember, we had that advantage. Mm-hmm. My mother brought all the meat in the Chinese meat markets in Juarez, that we had the meat market. Mm-hmm. She would buy beans there. Remember, vegetables. We used to help her bring rice. I think she bought the rice over there.
And you can bring a lot of groceries.
Well, you know, she'd take us all, and we each had a bag. We each had a bag to bring back.
But I mean, like today, that you're not allowed to bring like avocado or citrus.
I remember vegetables. Well, the avocados you could never bring back unless it took the seed out. Mm-hmm. I don't remember vegetables, but I do remember the staples. Sugar. She would buy sugar. Mm-hmm. I think she bought rice, I'm not sure. But the meat I remember she would bring. So we ate well. We had a lot of meat and potatoes, which she got here. Eggs she got here. They're very inexpensive. But there was, and we had no fancy clothes. I mean, we couldn't say, Mother, I want a new dress. Hey, you know. So the material things were scarce. Or, I mean, we didn't get a new dress every time. My dad worked with contractors. Construction was, I don't think it hurt because he always had a job. The only time that my dad had a problem getting a job was when the war started, because all construction came down because everything was going for the war effort. Mm-hmm. So he had no more construction work to go to. He was a carpenter. But going back to those 30s, the 30s, yeah, not having toys, because I was a child, and that's what I remember, mm-hmm. not having fancy clothes, but food, we didn't like for food. Well, how was that food? I don't know, my mother made it go, se hacía caldo, sí, sopa de arroz, we had a lot of sopa de arroz, potatoes, so we ate potatoes. So I don't remember saying, well, I couldn't go and say, Dad, would you give me some money for an ice cream or whatever? We didn't do that. We knew that he couldn't give us any or wouldn't give us any. We just didn't ask for it, like kids today. Like.
Yeah, that is why I'm telling you, because the kids today, they ask money to buy a lot of things.
We didn't.
Yeah.
We knew better. Mm-hmm. We were aware that money was to be used for food, clothing when we needed it. Never had to go barefoot, thank God. Mm-hmm. And my parents, my mother was, she was a one who kept the books at home. She stretched that money. We all went to parochial schools. How she was able to do that, I have no idea. All of us. First we went to Asilo, ran across the street, estaba un asilo de las madres, el Sagrado Corazón y de los pobres. And we went there, but I'm sure she paid something. So we went there, they prepared me for all of us for our first communion, and from there we went on to the parochial school at St. Ignatius School down in South El Paso. We lived in South El Paso, so it seemed like everybody around us in the same situation. You know, some worse than we were, because these people were recent immigrants and they didn't have good jobs, and I guess they worked in the fields. I don't know where they worked. Mm-hmm. I know some of them were working for the railroad. Some work for the railroad. And they were in the same situation we were. My dad, being a carpenter and having worked for construction companies, was fortunate that he was able to save a little money. His father had built the big house, my grandparents' home, back in 1909. And my dad was still single, so he helped him. And then my dad bought a little land next to a little house, very old house that was next to it, and a lot next door. So he built our home. So we had a home that my father owned. We didn't have to rent. We didn't have to go to Presidios. It was a small house. We were a little crowded because there were so many of us. But at least we had that, and other people had to live in Presidios. It was hard.
And about these cards, the ID cards?
Oh, yes. They came in the 30s. Again, that was a thing during the Depression. Mm-hmm. The United States didn't want additional burden. They had so many people to take care of. They didn't want to help immigrants. They said, well, you go back where you came from. We cannot support you, too. So how the word got out, I cannot tell you, because I was 9 years old, so I don't remember. I remember when my mother took us to a photographer and he took passport pictures of all of us. Well, there were George and I and Concha and Alicia and Willie, six of us, six kids, and my mother. I never saw my dad with an ID card. I don't know what happened to him, whether he was not a citizen yet. How he could, maybe he didn't go to Juarez in that time. I don't know how long it lasted. So they probably said, you will have to have ID cards, all of you, all Hispanics.
Otherwise,
go back to Mexico. We cannot keep you here. Well, we're American citizens, so there goes my mother, Mofira, to the bridge. And I remember we spent the whole day there playing outside, then we come back in. She must have bought us some food, because I think we were there all day long. And she was bilingual. Mm-hmm. She was able to defend herself. Says, my children were born here. They're U.S. citizens. Oh, yeah, but they are Hispanic and blah, blah, blah. Whatever they told her, I don't know. We still have to have an ID card, a passport. They would say a passport. And then as I got older, I said, this is not a passport. This is an ID card. As you can see on the back, it says you carry this with you. I don't think that we carried it with us all the time, but since we went to Juarez almost on a weekly basis, either to shop or see our aunts and uncles, cousins that we had in Juarez, we'd have to carry it with us, because you were required to show it on your way back. Otherwise, they wouldn't let you in. And my sister said, but it was a passport. I said, it was not a passport. Had there been a little güerita next to me, and say we were together, we'd go to Juarez and we'd be coming back, would she have been asked to prove her citizenship? But I was. I had to show my card. That went on, I don't think, too long, because I don't remember in my early teens having to use it again. When did the United States recover from the Depression? Starting in 1929, it hit us in the 30s. Mm-hmm. That's when we felt it. Mm-hmm. And by 1940, I think things were beginning to be much better.
Yes.
I'm guessing at the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think so. So, and do you remember that if you have any friend that was immigrant, that they have to live here?
I knew of them. I did not know personally. I said, what happened to so-and-so? Maybe they were in school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By that time, we were in parochial school. Oh, they went back to Juarez. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know why. Now I know why they went back. They were having a hard time. And then in addition to that, having to prove they were not citizens. Mm-hmm.
So they don't have, in the time that they were living here in the U.S., they don't have any problems about education, jobs?
The problems were economic problems.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think did I have any friends. Maybe that's why I don't remember any families. Did I have any friends at the at school who had to go back, who were not born here? I'd say 90% of those, even though we were all Hispanic, were born here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. The rest who could not go to parochial school were going to Alamo School, which is still there.
Mm-hmm.
That little school goes back 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to Alamo, which was a public school. By hearsay, I don't remember any that I knew personally who were sent back, but my friends would tell me, oh, so-and-so, yeah, yes, they fueron a Juarez.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
They did not know why or what or when. Now, the parents, you probably, hopefully, will run into some who went through that and eventually came back,
mm-hmm,
legally.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they were not here illegally, they were here because there were no problems coming over. Like there are now, of course.
Mm-hmm. And also, I read the first interview that you did, that there were banks here that were like going down, and
mm-hmm,
that your dad has some money saved here,
mm-hmm,
in one of those,
mm-hmm,
banks.
When my parents married in 1923, they... Maybe he wasn't working or something happened. He had been sick, he had pneumonia, and maybe something happened with the construction companies that he worked with that they decided to move to California.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, my eldest brother, the first one, was born there. He had had some savings that he had in a bank here in El Paso. And they decided, he had a sister in California already. Well, maybe life in California might be a little easier, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he did, and I think their plans were to stay there in California. But his brother, who was here, said, there's something going on with the banks. But this was 19... No, this was before the crash. But he heard rumors, something going on with the banks. This was 1925, early 25. I was born in October of 25. So when they moved back here, my mother was already carrying me. She was pregnant with me. So this was before the crash of 29. And so my dad panicked. Oh, I better go see about my savings. Came back and decided, because then the crash came and my mother was pregnant again, they decided not to go back to California and decided to stay here in El Paso. So he was afraid he'd lose. I don't think he lost it because he never talked about losing it. But what he did with it, I don't know. Put it under the mattress. We thought it'd be safer than the bank.
The piggy bank.
Yeah, piggy bank or something.
Okay. Now let's move to the Second World.
40s.
In the 40s. Can you tell me something about how was the life here before?
Very normal, Myrna, for me at my age. I was early teens, no? How old was that? 41, however. I graduated from grammar school in 41.
Mm-hmm.
I was still I think it was in the eighth grade when it started, 41. Yeah. And life was very normal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was nothing going on. People were going to school, people were going to work. And I don't remember any immigration problems either. There was something, has nothing to do with politics, but when we had a lot of Mexican families come over here to church, because when they closed the churches in Mexico,
mm-hmm,
and maybe that's when they started sending the kids
closed?
To school here, under the reign of Calles. When was that? 20s? No, your Mexican history, I don't know. that much about Mexican history.
La guerra de los cristeros.
Father Pro and all that.
Yes.
They closed all the churches in Juarez, so all my relatives would come to Mass here. And I think also that may have been the time when a lot of people moved to El Paso.
Because
of the persecution.
Oh, the persecution.
And they wanted the children to have a Catholic education, and they couldn't get it there. Because we had some kids in school, in the parochial school, who were from Juarez. And they must have had a little more money to be able to pay the tuition. And I think that probably brought another wave of immigrants to the United States. Whatever that year was, you can maybe fit it in.
Yeah.
What was going on was the... Okay, so back to the 40s. So when the war started, things were very normal. But then construction companies that my dad used to work for started folding up because there was no construction going on. Everything was for the war effort, So there's my dad, you know, I'm not a citizen, I don't have a job. Now that was a little hard for us, or maybe it was because I was older and I could see it. And I remember, there's going to be a party. Yeah, because I went into high school in 41. There's going to be a party in school, and I went to St. Joseph's Academy, which was run by the Sisters of Loretto. There's going to be a party, and I need a pretty dress, and I need some shoes. And that, when I remember more, because my dad says, we don't have any money for fancy clothes. I cannot give you any. I've lost my job. I don't have work. I'm trying to become a citizen. He was going to school, night school, so he could get ready for his citizenship. So he said, you go ask my sister, who lived two doors down. The only way we subsisted during those years, which to me were harder than the Depression years in the 30s, my dad had some little apartments that he rented at $3 a month. And he made it, I think the little front house rented for maybe $8, and all the other for $3 a month. Those people who lived there were like what you call welfare now, and the government was paying their rent. So my dad had to go to some downtown office and collect the money that they paid for the rent of those people. And we made it with that. So it was hard, even though, I had gotten a scholarship, so my first year at Loretto was being paid by a scholarship. But I had a uniform, so I wasn't spending a lot of money. But I wanted it because it was going to be a party. So he said, you go ask my sister to give you some money. My aunt had the corner house, which had been my grandparents' home. They were gone, so she lived there by herself. She also had some tenants in the back, which belonged to all that family. And so my dad would get a little something from her, too, la herencia. También habían sido muchos. So I go, ¿qué tía Nina? ¿Qué esto y esto? And then, pues, ¿cuánto necesitas? Well, she gave me some money, I don't know, probably $10. And I'd buy shoes and a dress.
Wow. It was a lot of money.
So that, to me, was harder. Right, I say 39, 40, and 41. But then my father got his citizenship. And then he was employed at Fort Bliss Civil Service. So that made it a little better.
What kind of jobs the immigrants used to have? Because I read in the interview that there were just a few Mexicans. Well, in this case, Mexican.
Oh, yeah.
That they have a very good jobs, like managers, or there are just few of them.
And the reason they did that, Marina, was they came with money. If you had no capital, how could you start a business here? My dad had his skill, which he had learned here, because remember, he came as a young boy. He and my grandfather was able to keep on with his music and build a house and have a nice house, and just playing music, because there's a lot of, I've got some copies for you, stories about his starting the McGinty Band, and then he had a little chamber music group. He played a little soirees in different homes of wealthy families. So he was all right.
What kind of music?
Mostly classical.
Oh.
You'll read something. I made copies for you from a book. And So he was doing all right. But then my dad married. He married late because he was helping him, my grandfather. So I went over to Tia, I told you that, Nina, and she gave me some money for my pretty dress, party dress, and my shoes. Then those were kind of just. My dad was lucky enough to apprentice with the company. He knew all. You hear? Are you familiar with that name, Trost, the architect in El Paso from way back? He built a lot of homes in El Paso. A lot of buildings are. They say, oh, that's a Trost home, and that's a Trost home. Okay. So he worked with these contractors who. That was the other guy's name. Can't remember now. Name, me and names, we have a problem. So he learned his trade as a carpenter from a young boy. He started in this carpenter shop, or this contractor. As a young boy, he learned the trade really, really well. And he became a very good carpenter. And he used to point out things for me here in El Paso. He'd say, oh, I worked in that building. And the Union Depot? He says, I worked there. I was a very young boy. And then sometimes we'd go meet somebody coming in on the train, and we'd be sitting there. And he says, mira, ¿ves todos esos? It's spindles in English. In Spanish. Mm-hmm. Torneaditos así. Mm-hmm. Dice, ¿ves todos esos que están ahí arriba en el mezanín? Dice, I made all of those. You did, Dad? Yeah, I made them at the shop. And then I would bring them over, and the carpenters, upper than he, they installed them, but I made them. He said, I was proud of it. He was a young boy. And my dad, this is something funny, a little anecdote. Mm-hmm. My dad learned from these carpenters in the shop. They were Anglo. They were not Hispanic.
Oh, really?
You could not be a carpenter, I mean a real carpenter, a cabinet maker.
Why not?
Because only Anglos, they were the ones who had the big, good jobs. Did you ever find a secretary in a bank who was Hispanic? And I'll come to that later. That happened to me.
Okay.
So only Anglos were in control of the good jobs. These were the carpenters making real good money. My dad came in as a gopher, you might say. They would send him to buy the nails, bring him in, an errand boy, kind of. That's how he started. He had gone to school, Sacred Heart School, Sacred Heart Church. Used to have a parochial school. That's where he went to school. But he didn't go to high school. He went to work. I guess my grandfather said, oh, I really can't. It's too much of a family. You have to go out and start working. Learn a trade. That's the way he would put it. And my dad became an excellent cabinet maker. He could make fine stuff. But he learned as a young boy in this shop, and all what I'm getting at, that he learned English more with those guys there than he did in school, because he said, no, las mojitas las enseñaron todo en español. So when he started working, all these guys were Anglo from East Texas, and my father, this is the funny thing, he spoke English with a Texan drawl. He did not speak English with a Mexican accent. He spoke it with a así como hablan los tejanos.
Uh-huh.
That's the way my dad spoke it. It's funny. He was bilingual because he had that accent, the Texan accent. So my dad learned that from the workers that he learned from, and he was very appreciative of having learned from very good cabinet makers. So he started moving up. So when he applied for civil service job, well, what's your trade? Well, I'm a carpenter. Oh, yeah, we need carpenters. We need carpenters. Well, así lo ocuparon, and before he knew it, he was a supervisor.
Wow, really?
So the end of the war, my dad was doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
My brother had gone into the service.
Mm-hmm.
My other brother was too young. So that's how he learned the trade, by actually going into a contractor's shop and having the big boys who already knew come show him how. And he learned. He worked at the lodge in Ridos, in Cloudcroft.
Mm-hmm.
He worked there.
Right.
He, a lot of the things, he said, little season.
Yeah.
So that's how people would come. If they had no trade, and ya si venían grandes, you know, they were adults.
To have a very good job.
They would go into the, my friends had, their fathers worked in the railroad. I don't know what they did at the railroad. Where else did they work? Their mothers had to go work, and they were maids.
Mm-hmm.
because since they didn't speak a lot of English, mm-hmm. My mother was fortunate, but since she was a citizen, before she married, she was a cashier at the Popular. Mm-hmm. The Popular was not discriminatory. Yeah. Since they were Jewish, and they had gone through the same thing, a lot of their employees were Hispanic. I'd say 90%.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. They were very good about that. But tried to get a job. Had my mother had 1 year of high school. Mm-hmm. Had she tried to get into a bank, well, they won't even let her in the door to be working there. Mm-hmm. And that went on for many years, even when I started, was trying to get a job.
So there was a lot of Jews here? Or
yes. Yes. Ask,
the colony was...
Ask... Esta
Susan,
she mm-hmm. tell you, is it those shorts?
Mm-hmm.
I found out. Oh, she ran into me at the library.
Okay.
I don't want that recording. The
yes.
discrimination.
Uh-huh.
When, and I always say this, when we were growing up, we didn't know it, but now that I look back, we lived in a ghetto. I didn't have any Anglo friends. We lived in Second Ward.
Uh-huh.
On Virginia Street.
Uh-huh.
What's there now? There's a school on Virginia Street. Right? We lived right across the street, 600 block of South Virginia,
uh-huh.
Which is called Second Ward.
Uh-huh.
But then it was a very nice neighborhood. We didn't have any gangs. Oh, you'd see an occasional guy who was on marijuana, and they'd say, oh, yeah, you mean on marijuana.
So you have drugs in that time?
Oh, yes, marijuana.
But...
Not as,
like
as much it is, no. You could see the guys, and my mother would say, now you watch out for those, it's little marihuanas. And so how did we know? They'd walk like they were walking on air. and we'd see them, and we'd cross the street. And come. They never bothered us. They were in their own little world, you know. Mm-hmm. They were high, but they were all little world. Yes, you would see them occasionally in South El Paso. There were no Anglos in South El Paso. I think we had two colored families. I know. I don't think there were any Anglos, but there were nice families in South El Paso.
So that is why you say that you were living like in a ghetto or something like
that? We were living. I didn't have any Anglo friends
mm-hmm.
until I went to high school. And when we were out, of course, we'd get out of the ghetto every weekend to go see a Shirley Temple movie, and we'd run into, but. And we had a sister, my mother's sister lived on North Cotton by that hospital that used to be Southwestern General Hospital on Cotton and Murchison. There's a hospital right there in the corner, small hospital. Mm-hmm. They lived right across the street. And we'd go visit them, and we would see some Anglo families, but we didn't know any.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know any Anglos until I went to high school. But there was discrimination, yes.
What about during school at Laredo? Because
I went to St. Joseph's. St. Joseph's was a branch.
This
St. Joseph's Academy was like the downtown school of Laredo.
Uh-huh.
Laredo had a lot of rich girls, yes. A lot of wealthy Anglo uh-huh. and very wealthy Mexicans.
Uh-huh.
But they opened up downtown school because Laredo is pretty much a prep school. When you go to Laredo, you know you're going to go to college.
Oh.
Well, our dream was get a job, you know, right after high school. So we went to St. Joseph's, and the courses there were not as oriented for pre-college, but they were oriented for what they call commercial courses. We had typing, shorthand, bookkeeping, those mm-hmm. things, in addition to history, English,
yeah.
and all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
But we were not geared into all you girls are going to go to college. The sisters knew
mm-hmm.
that we were from middle class,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted good jobs, and they trained us very well. All St. Joseph's girls, and I'm not bragging, but it's a fact, the St. Joseph's graduates had very good jobs when they graduated.
Wow.
Not professionals, we were not professionals, but we had good paying jobs because there were a lot of jobs available. When I graduated from St. Joseph's, I was in 45, right at the end of the war. The boys were still in the service, so I had no trouble finding a job. And even though I had a scholarship for Laredo Heights in Denver, They gave me a scholarship. I couldn't use it because my parents couldn't afford to send me. I was a second child from a big family when my mother was still having babies. The last one was born in 1943, I think. So I said, well, Mother, I have a scholarship to go to Laredo Heights. Well, let's see, let's sit down. She was the one that made all the decisions. My dad was there too. And, well, you need transportation, number one. I have to send you by train to Denver. You'll need clothes for that kind of weather. Are they paying you the room and board? No, it's just the tuition. Well, how much is your room and board? And then I think it was like $600. Can you imagine? This is a prestigious school. We can't afford it. My mother was a very practical woman. She said, we can't. I still have all these other kids to support. And we were all going to parochial schools. My brother had gone to Cathedral. Yeah, but he was already in the service. All my brothers went to Cathedral, except the youngest. He went to Jesuit High School, which closed. So I couldn't. I said, she's right. Well, maybe I can work. And my mother said, well, you're not being very realistic. But if you think you can earn like $1,000 this summer, you can go. Oh my God, $1,000 in 1945. That was in 3 months. No way, not good. But then I liked the money that I was earning. My first job was a little jewelry store. Didn't stay there very long. Then I went to the White House. I worked at the White House as a stenographer for the buyers. And I liked the little money coming in. Oh, I could buy clothes and all that. Yeah, because I'm not going to go to college.
Can't wait.
Esa es una cosa que digo yo, tonté, no haberlo hecho. But I did. Anyway, when I did go to night school here. Anyway, so those were the tribulations of going to school, and I did not experience any discrimination at St. Joseph's, which I might have at Laredo. But my two younger sisters went to Laredo, and by that time there were a lot of Hispanic girls going to Laredo.
So the
economical situation was better. They said, no, habíamos muchos mexicanos. And I did, because most of us were Hispanic downtown. It was on where the freeway goes, on North El Paso Street. That's where St. Joseph's was, not there anymore. So that was one discrimination that I had. Now, if you can locate my dad's tape, which was made I don't know when, he talks a lot about discrimination that he encountered, because with the contractors that he was working for, and when they traveled to Ridos or Clarkcroft, wherever they went to build hotels or wherever, they could not find a restaurant that would serve him. My brother, George, who died, was at the Cathedral football team, and they traveled to San Antonio all the time to play the San Antonio kids. And going there by bus, the coach, who was Anglo, would get off the bus, go inside, and buy sandwiches for them to eat on the bus because they were Hispanic. They would not. You've heard that. No Mexicans or dogs allowed. They could not go into a restaurant to buy a meal traveling from here to San Antonio. Oh, my brother went. And I'm sure that's in his interview. De esta muchacha Benavides.
Probably is.
Yeah, probably is. So my dad went through it. My brother did. I did. Then there are two sisters who follow me. And they probably did too, because I was going through the same. They went to El Paso High, though. My sister Concha went to El Paso High, and there were a lot of Jewish boys there. I mean, because they lived in Kern Place. Esos judíos, pero de venían con capital. They had the money to start their business. Well, maybe Mr. Schwartz didn't have a whole bunch of millions, but he was able to start a little clothing store, which evolved into the popular dry goods store. And the other, the jewelers.
So you didn't have any problems with them?
Then I pretty much ignored him, ignored it. I didn't run into much, except when I worked at a little jewelry store. I was kind of the clerk and stand-up for the owner. He was Italian. He's here on San Francisco Street, and that was kind of just to get my feet with, because I didn't want to be in the jewelry store for the rest of my life. I wanted a better job. And then I went to the White House, and I was a very good steno, and I was a steno for the buyers. But I wanted a secretarial job to the general manager, because he kept losing these secretaries, older women, Anglo, of course, and he'd hire another one. And I said, well, I'm sitting here. He knows I do good work. So I went to my supervisor and I said, how come Mr. Miller doesn't consider my taking over as his secretary? Well, because you're young, he said. Mexicana. Mm-hmm. So he kept hiring all these Anglo who never stayed very long. And I said, only with him, I'm going to look for another job. And surprise, surprise, there was an ad in the paper for a steno at the telephone company. Mm-hmm. And I said, telephone company? They hire Hispanics? So I went, oh, I had tried to get with the city. And no, ya la tenían escogida la chamaca que tomó el test. Mm-hmm. Anglo. So I could tell they didn't want Anglo. I tried El Paso Natural Gas. That was before your time. That was the big company here in El Paso. Mm-hmm. To work for El Paso Natural Gas, electric company, city or county, and it was hard to get in if you were Hispanic.
Oh, really?
Oh, El Paso Natural Gas. I wanted to get in there because I knew that had a lot of benefits, good paid jobs. Well, they would no more give me the time of day. We're not taking applications. I knew they were. Mm-hmm. We're not, and that was the excuse they gave you. We're not taking applications at this time. Okay. So then I went to the cell phone company. Mm-hmm. They never asked me. They never said no. They just gave me a test right then and there and hired me right like that.
Wow.
They needed a steno. Mm-hmm. And from there, I kept climbing. It took me 20 years to make management, but I did it.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Telephone company, they started hiring. Mm-hmm. There was a man you've heard, probably have heard his name, Cleofas Calleros. Very active back then, and he was the one who'd go around trying to place Hispanic girls in these companies that would not touch him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to do it because he was very vocal and known in the community. And he said, why are you not hiring? And I don't know if he was with LULAC at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if when LULAC started. I was never in LULAC, so I don't know. But darn it, the telephone company, and then from then on, they started hiring Hispanics. But I was like the second one.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Mm. They did have some Hispanics, but they had them in a department where the public didn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
There was the accounting department.
Mm-hmm.
And they never had any contact with the public or the customers.
Escondiditas. Just the Anglos.
Right. So I moved into a department where I was a second Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
That department had contact with the outside, with the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one thing they did... they interviewed me by telephone. They wanted to see how my telephone voice was. That was the only thing I said. Do you do this to everybody or just me?
Mm-hmm.
But they did. They never said why or anything. But I said, oh, I know where you want to see how I sound on the telephone.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Before they hired me. But it was a good company to work for.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the World War II. I read that you were in school when the...
Mm-hmm. Because I graduated in 45.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit of that.
Okay, all the boys were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're at war. So when we had our junior prom in school, we didn't have any boys to invite to our prom. They were all gone. And the ones who were behind were too young. Remember, I had a friend. He's still a friend. But he was my age or maybe a year younger. Chavalos. You know, we wanted grown up. We wanted seniors. We wanted sophomores at our prom. And so that was... for a girl that age, you know, that was a big problem. Hey, there are no boys to invite to our prom. Who's going to take us to our prom? That, the war, there was scarcity of shoes, leather.
Mm-hmm.
There was Juarez. We'd go buy shoes in Juarez.
So Juarez was the place to solve all your problems, I think. No? So for food, shoes, or
yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
That's
I
good.
Guess so. So what else? Then we started seeing all these boys, the soldiers, downtown, because they go to the movies. The movies, we only had the theaters downtown. There were there was one in Five Points. And they'd come downtown and look at the girls, and we'd be coming out of school, you know, we're seniors. And of course, you know, chakatin, is that the word? Mm-hmm. And some of them really did marry some of these soldiers who were here after they graduated. But my mother did like for us to. Mother, I was my mother, and what they used to call USOs, remember those places where the soldiers went? And there was one that was run by the Catholic Church, which was nice, up on North Cotton Street. I don't know what's there now. I say International Hotel that closed or whatever. Por ahí estaba un USO. And I said, but Mama, it's run by the Catholic Church. And blah, 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 they're good boys. She says, yeah, but we don't know who they are. And I could never go to a USO dance. I could never go to a USO dance. And then there was another place, San Jose Hall, that was also run by a group of men who belonged to an organization that belonged to the Catholic Church. And that was only about a couple blocks from my house. He says, no. Oh, my dad says, you don't know who they are. Where are they? Yeah. Even when you started dating, ¿y de qué familia son? Again, my dad had that Mexican way of, who are you going to go out with? You're not going to go out with a stranger. At least with me and my other sister. Yeah, it must be. One of my sisters married an Anglo. But anyway, it was strict. The families were very strict about their girls getting mixed up with the soldiers who were coming through here. They were stationed at Fort Bliss. Mm-hmm. Know who they were, coming from other places. Mm-hmm. No, the culture was so different.
Mm-hmm. And what about the immigrants, the boys?
A lot of them went into the service because they felt there was a good way of making money. And they did they become citizens automatically? I have that in the back of my head. That if they joined the service, they could become citizens. I know some did. Mm-hmm. Some did. And of course, a lot of them were going to cathedral. Mm-hmm. Juarez. So we knew, and a lot of girls were going to St. Joseph's from Juarez. So there was this commuting like you do now for UTEP. Hey, UTEP, that's another. You've heard of that. ¿Qué no había mexicanos? Y los poquitos, los poquitos que habían hacían un grupito. Uh-huh. Get some interviews for people who. You're not going to get it from Mary Carmen because she went away to college. There are some ladies whom you can interview. They tell me about it because they were friends of mine. They came here and they couldn't mix. They wouldn't or couldn't or didn't want to mix with the Anglos. They had their sororities. These girls were never approached to join a sorority or a fraternity for the boys. Very segregated UTEP was a college of mines then. And then it became Texas Western. When Texas Western went in, there were more.
My
brother coming back from the war, it was more open because all the GIs were coming back and they wanted to go to school. And that's how my brother got his college education. So, I have the GI Bill. I'm going to go to college. Of course, he had gone right after he graduated from high school. But there was discrimination here.
Wow.
Yeah. Up until recent times.
And now?
Hasta que entró Natalicia.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And I remember when she came in, we were at a dinner, luncheon somewhere, and she was at the head table or something. I went to say hello to the guy who was, because I knew him. I had gone to school with his wife, Abraham Chavez, symphony director that we had before this one. He was up, and I went to say hello to him, and she was next to him, and I said, Dr. Natalicia, you're the best thing that ever happened to you too. She went like that because I knew the other presidents. I was working for the CEO at the telephone company at the time. And these presidents, Templeton, Williams, Monroe, I can name them off, were on the board of directors at the telephone company. And they would go for the monthly meeting. And I had dealings with them. I had to talk to them. Very personable men. But they couldn't care more about you. UTEP for them was a stepping stone for something better. And of course they all moved up to better universities, you know. So then the last one, Monroe, when he left, Athalicia was already on campus. She was a dean or assistant vice president, whatever she was. Mm-hmm. And the regent said, why not her? First woman president of a university. And from then on, the university is what it is now because of Natalicia. I know there are people who don't care for her, but if it weren't for her, UTEP would not be what it is now, 80% Hispanic. Whereas before, in my time, it was probably like 4%. Well, in the first place, a lot of us Hispanic, they were marrying. The boys were coming back from the war, mm-hmm. and they were marrying, starting a family, so they were not going to college. A few of them did. Two of my friends who graduated from St. Joseph's came, mm-hmm. and both of them became teachers. One of them became a principal. So, UTEP also had that discrimination.
Uh-huh. So you were telling me about these boys, the immigrant boys.
Oh, yeah. From... I didn't really know any of them, Myrna. I knew some who were going to cathedral. Mm-hmm. Some of them married local girls. The discrimination, not in my school, because I'm Mexicanas. Mm-hmm. Cathedral, there are a lot of Hispanics there. Mm-hmm. Did they run into any discrimination? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did I see any discrimination? They probably had the same discrimination that I had. Maybe like looking for a good job, mm-hmm. and not being given the opportunity to apply for it and show that we were capable of doing that job. They looked at, well, you're Hispanic, not realizing, hey, can you do the job? Mm-hmm. First thing, no, you're Hispanic and you have to be dealing with Anglo customers. We don't want that. See, that was a discrimination. I went through it, and I'm sure some of them did too. Immigrants. No. There weren't any moving in then.
Because there was a law, right? Immigration law during World War II.
About immigrants not coming in?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking.
I think I read something about this in your first interview.
That was before the Bracero program, because the Bracero program, I think, started in the late 60s.
Yeah, well, starting in the 40s, 45.
Is that a Bracero program?
44.
You know what? They maybe just came through here and they moved up northern. To the northern states. Because mm-hmm. when I became aware of the Bracero program was in the 60s, mm-hmm. maybe
it
50s,
was almost the end
late
of the program.
50s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because my brother was one of the processors, mm-hmm. Interviewers, whatever. Mm-hmm. But who did our field work? You're right, who did it?
Yeah, there were Braceros because they were here because of the war.
All
the
boys were gone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and the girls that stay here, a lot of them were working in industries, I don't know, like...
sewing factories.
Yeah, automobile factories and police. Well, I mean, the military bases also. Yeah, and Braceros came here because...
I know of one woman who married a boy who had come in the Bracero program. Mm-hmm. But the Bracero program, there were a lot of them who came in, mm-hmm. not because they were agricultural workers, but because they wanted an easy way in. Mm-hmm. And then they found out they were not agricultural workers. They didn't know how to work a field. But they were soon discovered, and I guess they sent them back. Or maybe some of them just sneaked in mm-hmm. at that time, but I don't. I'm thinking.
No, that's fine. Tell me about this issue about the girls taking the boys' jobs, the tough jobs in the industry. Do you have any
There were no factories here in El Paso. Let me see.
But Fort Bliss,
I know they were hiring a lot of girls at Fort Bliss. But the reason, but the one reason I stayed away from that, because I knew it was temporary. I knew when the boys came back, we were out. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I gotta have a job where I could stay. But they were hiring a lot of, and Hispanics, a lot of Hispanic girls were working at Fort Bliss.
And tell me a little bit about these letters that you received from your brother and his Office of Censorship.
I don't know where that was located. Now, my sister Alice tells me that Ms. Ramirez was doing that here. And I said, I thought they did that somewhere where the letters first came in. Mm-hmm. She said, no, they came to El Paso. She was sitting there cutting. I said, how would she know what to cut out? Well, anything that had pertaining to a battle, snip it off. And my older brother was in the Navy, and we'd get his letters, and my mother would. And they were all torn up. Oh, she would try to read between the lines. And after he came back, we asked him, what were you telling us that they cut out? He said, well, about a battle and the dead people that he saw.
The kamikazes.
The kamikazes that would come on his ship. Mm-hmm. And they cut him out. So we didn't know about kamikazes until he came home and told us about it. Mm-hmm. That probably is in his interview. All his letters. They had what they call the, I was going to say email. Go back, see. What did they say? They had a name for it. It was a piece of paper that could be folded up, mm-hmm. and you would fold it this way, and then maybe this way, and then seal it. It's one page. Mm-hmm. It was the address, and then the letter was inside. Victory Mail or something like that. I forget the name of it. And we get those from him. My mother would just wait and wait for a letter from him. Sometimes we'd go weeks without getting any letters from him. But they were censored. I did not know where they were censored and who trained the censors. That I don't know. But then I found out just recently that they did it here in El Paso. Yes. She worked for the post office. She'll probably tell you more.
The building was in the downtown?
Yeah, it's still there. Uh-huh. A big building on Mills and Stanton.
Yes.
Still there. What did they know what it cut out? I guess they were told anything about a battle or where they are. That was another thing. They couldn't say, my brother couldn't say, we were approaching whatever island they were in.
Probably because there were a lot of spies from Japanese. Also, somebody told me, another person that I interviewed, he said that there's a lot of Chinese stores, Japanese stores.
Oh, all
stores.
South Oregon Street was all Japanese, Chinese, yeah.
And Juarez.
Oh, yes,
but
all the meat
Japanese
markets were.
All those Japanese were spies. And American soldiers used to go there to drink or something. So the Japanese kind of taking a look of that. Do you know something over there?
No, but I can imagine that was going on.
Mm-hmm. So, and probably that is why the Office of Censorship.
They didn't want the word spread. There were a lot of posters that you would see downtown, and there would be Uncle Sam going like this. Be careful what you say.
Oh, really?
And then there was another one. You know, they depicted what could happen and what you should not be discussing. Well, what could we discuss? We don't know what was going on. Uh-huh. What we knew, we would see in the newsreels and the movies or read in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the reason for that tight censorship. Mm-hmm. Like there is now, you know, with the security that they have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what happens when the boys came back?
A lot of them went back to school. My brother did. Went back to school. Many of them who could not have afforded to go before the war. See, there was one good thing. It really helped the economy of El Paso. Jobs were opening again. They went to school, they became professionals, a lot of lawyers that we know in the family. And it was an opening for them to educate themselves. So that generation, a lot of them went to college and got their degrees. A lot of them came here. That was one wave of Hispanics into Utah. It was then it was College of Mines, and then it became Texas Western. Mm-hmm. That was the first wave.
Yeah, and again, immigrants.
Immigrants after the war.
Mm-hmm. Because I suppose that they took the jobs that the boys left, but once the boys came back.
I'm trying to think what they could have done. Who would have hired them, for one thing? I don't know. I can't think of any that... We didn't have a lot of industry here. The clothing manufacturers, maybe there, they were hiring, but they kind of started after the war. That's when Farah and all those other clothing manufacturers that have since gone kaput, they started up after the war. So in that industry, because we didn't have, well, there was a railroad,
or
we didn't have industries.
The land, the agriculture.
Who was doing the agriculture? That's a good question. This boy who was able to stay here and married one of a friend of mine, he wasn't in agriculture. I don't know. I guess I went back. I don't know.
And what about during the war? There were a lot of immigrants coming in, or they stopped it, or
did I see any? During the war, we still had those girls coming to St. Joseph's to school, but they were commuters. Immigrants? I don't know, Myrna.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Well, there's a lot of things that I will ask. I would like to ask you, but during the, I heard that when the war finished, you have like a parade or something like that.
Oh, yeah, we had parades all the time. Every 4th of July we had a parade.
Everything was like a big party.
Oh, yeah.
After that.
Oh, yeah. If you came downtown that evening when the, which ended first, Japanese or the European? I forgot now. Which one?
European first.
Okay. Oh, there was a big parade, and I worked. Where was I working at the time? The Mills building, the White House. Because I went to work at the telephone company after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you could see all these streamers flying out of the windows from these tall buildings. They're just and everybody got in a car. They were driving all over town, like cruising. There were lots of cruising. All that evening, mm-hmm. celebrating the end of the war for both theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of joy, happiness. Churches had special masses, and they were ringing the bells, too. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I don't know if you have another experience that you coming into your head to finish the interview or something else that you want to say?
Except that I am very happy that this is starting, because there's not a better place in the border to have this immigration museum
mm-hmm.
than right here in El Paso. Because I call this the Ellis Island of the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
This is where most people came in. I'm sure that a lot of them came in through Laredo and those areas, and I'm sure they have a lot of stories to tell. But I think that El Paso was the doors burst open for immigration. The revolution had a lot to do with it. The revolutions, plural, in Mexico had a lot to do with it. They wanted to, and you hear old-timers talking about what they had to go through during Villas, time, especially here in Chihuahua. So even before then, in Madero's time, my father met him when he came to Juarez, Madero, and he was having problems. They established like a Red Cross unit here in El Paso to take care of the wounded. And one of my dad's sisters worked there. And in fact, I have a picture of her in this little, that came from a newspaper. It's not mine. How did I get it? I think my brother, sí, que salió en el diario or something. Uh-huh. And I'll show it to you later.
Okay.
Anyway, so they played over here, and a lot of Trinidad's music was played at that time, of Madero's time, coming over here. Where was I headed for this? Bring me back on track.
Because here was like a lot of people coming to the United
States.
That
I think that this is the best thing to happen, and this is a museum that really needs to be here on the border, and what better place than the university.
And you said that not only, because you have a lot of friends that immigrate here, but not only Mexicans, also Chinese,
the Chinese and
Asians.
Mostly Mexicans, of course, but they have come. The ones that I have met now, they come with their degrees. They come with an education, and they want to get better. Like this woman I was talking about. I said, "Well, how about Mexico?" And she said, "Si me pagan en dólares." See, they get used to the dollars. They don't want to go back to Mexico with this fine degree that she has, educated. And I have relatives in Guanajuato now who are sending their daughters to Europe. I said, we have a great university here in El Paso. No, because we want them to be in a university where they hear no Spanish or they'll never learn English. So where are they? Up in England. Tienen el dinero. Pero digo yo, my goodness, why can't they come here and save money? No, allá, of course, her father is a diputado, but he'll not be in office too long anyway. But they are now coming. I see them coming now for a good education, like you and all the other students that I see around here. See, there are three work studies at UTEP, in the museum. And they tell me why they're coming over here. They want a good education in an American institution because they see a better future for them to really learn, be in English, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them may come. Did you come in with a degree from?
From Chihuahua.
From Chihuahua? Ya venías con.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to expand
your
experience.
Yeah,
and that's why, see, now they're coming more for that, for education.
Yeah, because it's near from our house, the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So,
uh-huh.
And also to have a better education and to have a better view of what's going on in the rest of the world. And
And you can get it here without having to go to a more expensive. Because the further in you go, the more expensive it's going to be.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're a graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Okay.
Good.
Well. Thank you for coming
You're
here.
Welcome.
It was very interesting to hear your experiences. Thanks.
How many more do you have to go?
Thank you for coming here for this interview. And to start, I would like you to tell me something about your background, your family, your parents, your grandparents.
The first immigrant to the United States from Mexico was Trinidad Concha, who was my grandfather. He was a musician in the Porfirio Diaz military band, which was the pride of Mexico, as I hear. Very good musicians, and he was the arranger. I wish I could remember the year, but I think it was 1894, 1893, thereabouts. They were invited, because of their being so famous, to play at the San Francisco World's Fair. They traveled from Mexico City, where he was living. Originally, he was from Guanajuato, so was his wife. But they were living in Mexico City with, I think there were four children at the time. He came with the band. They came through El Paso by train up to San Francisco, played. I understand there's a picture of that band in one of their museums. On the way back through El Paso, it stopped over, the train, the band stopped over to stay for, I guess, a little rest. And he already had a brother here, Melitón, who was also a musician by avocation, but the way he made his living was a barber. He was a barber. Had his own little barber shop. And El Paso was nothing then, from what I hear my dad talking about. His brother said, "Why don't you leave the military in Mexico? It's not paying you enough. You're having children. It's hard." "Yes," he said, "it's very hard to raise children on what I make. Why don't you just leave and come here? There's a lot of work here. There's a lot of work for even musicians, which I do part-time, and my barbershop." Well, Trinidad was not a barber, but he was, being from Guanajuato, from León, he knew bootmaking, and so he could always work that in addition to being a musician. He went back to Mexico and told his wife the discussion he had had with his brother, and apparently she was all for it. So he said, "Well, let me ask for my discharge, and then we'll all go." Well, he was so naive, he thought he was going to get a discharge. They, of course, said no. So he thought about it. He said, "I'm leaving. I am going to the United States." So he told Jovita, his wife, "I'm leaving, and I'll send for you as soon as I save enough money to do that." Well, this I've got to tell everybody, because Jovita was a very sharp little young. They were so young when they got married. I think she was 16, he was 18 when they married. So she said, "You're not going alone. You're going to take Carlos," which was the youngest kid in the family. He was like 3 years old. So she said, "That way I know that he'll be back." So, of course, he was a good family man. He did, and he started working with a Rokar boot company in El Paso, but also had a lot of jobs as a musician. El Paso was just starting out. There was a little social life. People wanted a group of musicians to play. He had a group like a chamber group, the string instruments. So that's the way he started saving money. He moved in with his brother had by that time bought a few little tenements, little apartamentitos, mm-hmm. on way down on El Paso Street. And his sister-in-law, they had no family, his brother and his sister-in-law, took care of the little boy, Carlos. That happened, started working, and in 2 years' time, he had earned enough money to send for Jovita and the other kids. So they came by train. See, this was way before revolution. They had the luxury of being able to come by train. Not, you know, how many people walked or horses or whatever. They came by train. There was no immigration at the time. The train came right through to El Paso. There's a little building still standing, the last time I saw, on Santa Fe Street. And it says Santa Fe Railroad. I don't know what they use it for. That was the original train depot in El Paso. Stopped there, got off the train with her. I think there were four kids already. My dad was one of them. He was the second one. Two, three, there were four kids. He was, this was in 1896. My dad was about 8 or 9 years old. And she got off the train. "What do I do now?" Apparently, the other one not able to meet her. But he had told her, "Well, just ask anybody where Melitón Concha lives." And she did. She got off the train and asked the porter, "Where is Melitón Concha?" "Right over there, across the street." So she walked over with the kids. Another funny anecdote that my dad used to tell me, I guess to entertain us. When my grandmother, Jovita, walked into her brother-in-law's wife, que vienen siendo con cuñas or whatever, uh-huh. And she saw this lady who was from Sonora. Apparently, I don't know how she met Melitón. That's a story I don't know very much about. She was making flour tortillas. And, of course, she was rolling them out with a pin. And she said, I think later she told Trinidad, "Que señora tan vieja, making tortillas with a, with the palo. Qué floja señora haciendo tortillas con un palo. She had never heard of flour tortillas. You don't see them in Mexico. In Mexico, you have corn tortillas.
Uh-huh.
So that was a little funny anecdote. So from there on, he kept working with Roker Boot Company on Texas Street. I think that's where they were located. Mm-hmm. And music. He and another German man started the McGinty Band. My grandfather, the other guy spoke English, so my grandfather did not. He learned a little bit later on. So he would make the contacts, and they started what is called, and you can find this in Stories About El Paso, the McGinty Band.
Uh-huh.
So that gave him a little more money. Mm-hmm. With time, he started forming his own band,
mm-hmm.
Concha's Band. And I got pictures of those. With the very military uniform, which he was used to, having been with Porfirio Diaz, he thought, that's what we want. We want a military band. Then he and Melitón started a boys' band. So his music kept him going, where later he was doing more music than Boots. But eventually he became a partner with Mr. Roker, who's German, in the Boot Company. Eventually they went out of business, but he was helping him out. But making his living was music,
mm-hmm.
And all his brothers, I'm talking the first one, Trinidad, were musicians,
mm-hmm.
because later on with the revolutions they started coming over,
mm-hmm.
his brothers, and then they were playing, and through all their lives that's what they were doing, musicians. So my dad grew up in a household where music was important,
mm-hmm.
but also hard work. So my dad started working. He went to Sacred Heart Catholic School through the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to go work. By that time, there were like seven of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to go find a job. He was a gopher, they call him now, with a construction company.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned his trade of carpentry, and became a very good carpenter,
mm-hmm.
with the contractors.
Mm-hmm.
He named them off. I'm trying to remember the names, but I can't.
What about the prohibition about?
The prohibition came in the 20s.
Uh-huh.
By that time, my dad was an adult, married already, because
uh-huh.
he and my mother married in 23.
Uh-huh.
So that's when prohibition, when the law came into the United States, no more liquor. Then everybody started making bootlegging, liquor,
mm-hmm.
beer and wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my dad was trying to get into this. There's a little extra money I can make there. He bought the equipment. I remember seeing them when we were very young. It was a ceramic vat,
mm-hmm.
barrilito, like a barrel shape. And he had bottles. I remember seeing beer bottles. And but apparently he either couldn't do it, didn't know how, or couldn't get a partner. Because afterwards, we were playing with the bottles, and so that, he didn't get into that. But that was a good business for somebody who knew how to make bootlegging.
Mm-hmm.
What did they used to call it? They had another name for it. Because they couldn't bring it from Juarez, but they could go drink over there.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't have it at home.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of illegal bootlegging. Somehow or other, they'd find a way to bring the bottles over here.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not, that's all I remember about bootlegging,
mm-hmm.
and my family, that he tried. I think another one of his brothers, who eventually became a bartender,
mm-hmm.
many years later, I think he may have had success with it, but
right.
I don't know for sure.
Uh-huh.